Welcome to the Agile Revolution. This is Craig. We're at the Agile 2015 conference in Washington, D.C. and great to finally catch up with Christopher Avery. How are you doing, Christopher?
I'm doing very well, Craig. Thank you for having me.
So I think I first saw some of your content at an Agile conference back in probably 2009, I think it was, where you were talking about the responsibility process. But who is Christopher Avery? Let's just start with that, because I suspect a lot of listeners to the podcast won't know who you are.
So Christopher Avery is someone who has earned deep credentials in the science of organization science and leadership, and then followed his own path to understand what is leadership naturally, not as a title, but in terms of the innate leadership that's in all of us and how we can build it. And that led me to the work on the responsibility process. Mm-hmm. So I am a little bit scientist and a whole lot teacher and coach, and I work with leaders and leadership teams all over the world who want to rapidly create results that matter.
So what's your background then? Where did this all come from? Is it just from observing lots of really rubbish leaders over time, or is it more a scientific background?
You know, you might say it has more to do with my my life narrative or journey. So I actually started a career after undergraduate school, and I was rapidly unfulfilled. And I sort of looked at the next 30, 35 years of being in a career, and I thought of my father, who was a very successful Manhattan executive. But he came home from work every day tired and sore and frustrated and pissed off and had lifelong high blood pressure that killed him. Mm. And I had some lucky breaks. I had a professor that invited me to go back to grad school. I ended up going to a top PhD program. And the main thing I took out of my study of organizations and business in my PhD was the problem of businesses both performing highly and being profitable and people having a life at work. And were those two things negatively correlated, or could they be positively correlated? And so what I love about Agile is the Agilists found out the positive correlation between those things. Mm-hmm. But most of the assumption of management science is that those things are at odds with each other. Mm-hmm. And so that's what's inspired me my entire career.
And did the Agile community find you, or did you find the Agile community? That's always an interesting thing I find with people who are kind of on the periphery.
So I started studying organizational agility in 1985. Mm-hmm. And I started doing team-based organizational change projects in large product development and IT organizations starting around 1990, mm-hmm. including places like IBM, AMD, Intel, Wells Fargo, Charles Schwab.
Did it have a name then?
It was self-organizing teams.
Okay.
Right. And so I ran into the Agile. I was not in the same group that did the Agile Manifesto, and it took me about 2.5 years after that to run into it. I was engaged fully by 2004. Mm-hmm. In fact, I keynoted the first combined XP Agile Universe conference in Calgary in 2004.
Wow.
And so this would be my 11th or 12th conference, Agile conference. So we sort of found each other. Mm. And one of the leaders of the people and interactions, culture, leadership side of Agile since then.
Absolutely. So I think it's where I first came across you, and one of the things that really struck me is, as we mentioned before, the responsibility process. And I've got the little card that you gave me. In fact, I've got one at home, which is kind of on my wall to remind me that this is a nice little card. But
yeah, many people do, and we should probably tell your listeners they can go to ChristopherAvery.com to the resources section. And we've got the responsibility process poster in 26 languages.
Wow.
They can download, including Klingon.
Including Klingon. Been a while since I've been there. I have to go check it out.
And I think we've got it in Australian too.
This has to have mate and g'day in there somewhere. So what is the... So for those who haven't seen it, or perhaps going to take a look at it, because sometimes when you read it just on the paper, it does make sense. Right. So can you give us a very quick rundown of what the responsibility process is?
Yeah, so the responsibility process is a naturally occurring pattern in your mind and my mind and everybody's mind that shows how we respond to upset, the tiniest little anxiety or frustration, in ways that we... either cope with it, and to use our specific language, that means we're not actually fully owning it, or take responsibility for it and grow to be more powerful over it. So the responsibility process shows us how our mind responds and processes thoughts about taking or avoiding responsibility, which is a touchy subject because we're all responsible people. But what we say is there's a gulf of a difference between being a generally responsible person and operating from 100% responsibility around everything in your life. So, you know, if you're listening to this, I'm going to describe a stack of words, starting at the bottom, six or seven words. And at the bottom of the list is lay blame. Next up is justify. Next up is shame. Next up is obligation. And then above obligation is the word responsibility.
And the awesome thing is, even though it's sitting on the table, he didn't even look at the words on there. They just came straight out.
Yeah. Who needs to do that after so many years of this? So here's how it works. Every time something goes wrong, and when something goes wrong, our definition of a problem is when you're in motion towards a goal and you get stopped. So just think you're driving along in your car and somebody cuts you off and you have to hit the brakes. Mm. Well, that's a perfect definition. Especially if at that moment you feel some frustration or some evaluation about that. So you're in motion towards a goal and you get stopped. And at that moment, the responsibility process kicks in. It's part of your mind's attribution center, which is always trying to explain cause and effect. So why is this happening to me? And your mind goes to the bottom of that list. Your mind goes to blame. That stupid son of a...
Right.
This is the crazy part. If you accept the answer that your mind automatically hands you, yeah, that guy, right? Then you actually stay in blame and use the logic of cause and effect to manage your life. And what we know is that all of these positions below responsibility are coping strategies and not using our resourcefulness, and they don't bring us fulfillment.
Mm-hmm.
Just help us cope. So the game is to recognize these mental states and get off of them and move up.
And so justify is the next one. I mean, do you have to go up through the stages? Is it like the seven stages of grief, or can I jump from lay blame to responsibility straight up?
Yeah, well, so it's interesting, Craig, that you mentioned the seven stages of grief. There's actually a fair amount of correlation between these two models, where that model describes what I would call macro loss or huge loss, humongous loss. This describes tiny loss, but the stages are actually quite similar. Mm. So I believe that at someday science will stitch the two together in some way. Do you go through each stage? You may not consciously experience it, mm-hmm. but our belief is that you do.
Okay.
Even if for a microsecond. So, if you've been conditioned to blame, but you've been conditioned to not accept a dumb story or excuse,
mm.
and then you've been conditioned to shame, then you might have a blame answer. And if I point out to you, you're kind of a victim, you can't do anything about that, your mind might go to, well, I was in a hurry and blah, blah, blah. And then you say, no, that's just a story. And then the next thing you do is you feel bad.
Yeah.
So what that means is we think we visit each stage, even if just for a micro moment, before the one we land on and say, yep, that's the answer, I'm trapped.
So in the example of the guy cutting us off in the car, I first go, you're stupid, and then I might justify it by, oh, well, every driver's an idiot, or right. Maybe I shouldn't have been in the right lane.
I could have left 20 minutes earlier and been less of a hurry, right? Yeah.
So then what would be the shame part of that story then?
Well, we may not have a great example there, but it could simply be that that you realize that you chose... you chose to be upset, you chose to put yourself on that highway at that time.
Okay. So you're making yourself sort of feel bad for the decision.
Right. Shame is just blame on self.
Okay.
So you're shifting the blame from another person to yourself, which we are very, very good at human beings. In fact, we call it, quote, taking responsibility.
Mm.
Right. But so all of these words are pseudonyms for responsibility,
mm-hmm.
Because we use that word for different attributions of cause and effect. So anyway, I don't want to get us too far afield here, but
so what is obligation then? How does that move you on from shame?
Obligation is, so shame and obligation, I've learned, is what our professional population needs to deal with, because we grew up being told that these top three words, shame, obligation, and responsibility, that they're all being responsible.
Mm-hmm.
Which means if you're beating yourself up for making a mistake, well, good boy, he's taking responsibility. But the issue is that you're still not in a resourceful frame of mind. In fact, you're in a frame of mind of lack. You're saying, I suck.
Mm-hmm.
And we even say, what's wrong with me? And then your mind starts giving you all the answers, right? Well, you didn't go to the right college, you're not smart enough, blah, blah, blah. In obligation, we feel trapped in a promise or a commitment or a pattern or a flow that we don't want to be in.
So it's obligated that I was obligated to be here when that guy cut me off because I had to meet my boss at 9 o'clock or something.
Yeah, or I have to go to this stupid meeting. I have to do this dumb paperwork. And so the thing about obligation is that it's not about whether or not we have a commitment. It's how we feel about it.
Mm-hmm.
And our population and the two or three populations before us, we've been taught to do what we're supposed to do even if we don't like it. And that's called being a responsible person. But the problem is that when you're in the mental state of obligation, have to, don't want to, your performance is barely adequate to get a pass. Our motivation is very low. We're very disengaged in that mental state. And we build up this resentment in our mind that's very toxic. So certainly one of my missions is to help smart, educated, motivated, ambitious people come to identify how much time they spend in obligation, how to learn how to get out of that and be much more fulfilled, be more committed to the things that bring you joy, figure out how to offload or not make commitments that you know are going to have you dragging your feet, and all that kind of stuff.
So there's a reason then on the, and for those who might be looking online, which makes a lot more sense than us talking about it, but obligation and shame are colored green. Is that because they are a responsibility and I guess we see them as a good thing as opposed to the red ones being things that aren't good for us?
Yeah, so let me speak to your listeners, Craig. So in the posters that we produce, we have the lay, blame, and justify in red, shame and obligation in green, and responsibility in blue. Since the advent of agile dashboards, I certainly would have picked different colors.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the colors are simply meant to relate to what society teaches us about responsibility. So society agrees with our research that, quote, you shouldn't blame and justify. So, you know, we've all been raised to say that we shouldn't blame, we shouldn't tell stories. Now, one little difference, so that's why it's in red. However, society teaches us to beat ourselves up and to do what we're supposed to do even if we don't like it. So I put that in green just to say that, to call that out about society, says that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm not so sure that it's actually operating from, well, in fact, I'm quite sure that it's not operating from pure responsibility.
Okay. So then how do you get across the line to responsibility then?
Oh, really good question. First of all, the profound thing to realize for yourself is that these are all just mental states, and they're all available to you all the time, which means the mental state of responsibility is also available to you all the time. And the way to graduate from one state to the next, work your way up, is to simply refuse to operate from that mental state. So if we refuse to blame, our next series of thoughts will be a story, a narrative about the circumstances beyond our control, justify. If we refuse to justify, our mind kicks us into shame and we start feeling bad and beating ourselves up. It's not that I want you to feel bad or beat yourself up. I know it's natural, we all do it. And I want you to realize that if you then decide to refuse to beat yourself up, no matter how long you've been doing it or what it is, you know, you kicked your sister when she was 16 or whatever, right? if you refuse to beat yourself up, the next thing that your mind will do is tell you, but you're trapped with this burden, you're in this, you know, you don't have any choice. So here's how you get to responsibility. Refuse to be trapped. Mm-hmm. If you refuse to be trapped, then what happens is your mind spans both obligation and responsibility at the same time, where you still have the anxiety that's got you in obligation, but a part of your mind is starting to ping your more resourceful mind, looking for a new answer, looking for a new solution. And so what I suggest to people is to listen for yourself saying, I have to, and to catch it and change it to a statement that you're willing to own. Right?
I want to.
I am going to this stupid meeting. I get to go to this stupid meeting. Right?
I choose to go to this stupid meeting.
I choose to go to this stupid meeting, and it's only because I don't have a better choice at the moment. Now, when you do that, you feel the incongruence. Well, it's that incongruence I want you to feel, because if you don't feel that, your mind will not say, oh, you're looking for a different choice here. And it won't start looking for it. If you simply say, I have to go to this stupid meeting, your mind says, you're right. And it doesn't start looking for a new answer. So that's a nice little quick primer about how to start practicing responsibility.
Mm. So Renee has joined us. Welcome, Renee.
Thank you. I've spent 25 minutes looking for you guys.
There you go. We're in the atrium.
Yeah, you said open jam, but that's okay. I'm here now.
It was a bit busy down there. So one of the things, I guess, on the back of here, which is something I think the words have changed slightly, but you set people with a bit of a challenge then, like you were saying before, to catch yourself or to record. So you want to talk us through the sort of little exercise that you can do?
Sure. So here at the conference, I passed out a card that on one side has the responsibility process poster, and on the other side it has three little areas to keep score using little tick marks. And at the bottom it says heard it, and in the middle it says said it, and at the top it says caught it. Well, the value of this is in generating awareness, because as I said, the responsibility process is a pattern that's in all of us. And even knowing about it and mastering it doesn't make it go away. Which means that after studying it and mastering it for 25 years, still every time something goes wrong, my mind goes to the bottom to blame. Mm. However, I am very good at catching it and getting off of it like that. And moving myself up, and I demand for myself that I not operate out of blame, justify, shame, or obligation, and that I stay inside my mind until I can get to responsibility, so that when I operate from that mental state. So this game is a game to build awareness around that. So if you walk around, you can hear blaming and shaming and I suck and I have to go to this meeting and stuff. And so when you hear that, I just invite people to keep score in the heard it section. If you can actually be aware enough of yourself to catch yourself saying it, then we have a set it section to capture that. And if you can be aware enough to realize you have the thought, but you get off of it before you operate, then have a tick mark there. And for scoring, I say at the end of the day, give yourself 1 point for hearing it for each time you heard it. Give yourself 100 points for each time you said it, because you know what? It's 1,000 times easier to see this and hear it in others than it is in ourselves. And give yourself 1,000 points for every time you caught it. Because catching yourself once is 1,000 times more valuable to you than hearing it 1,000 times from other people. Mm. So that's the game that we play.
And a lot of this, these things and all the things you talk about are rooted in a lot of scientific, or I guess research, I guess is more what we're looking for. So where do you get this from? I mean, do you observe observations? Do you stand behind pot plants? And tell us a little bit about how you sort of come across a lot of this thinking.
So the research started in 1984, and it was started by someone who has academic, I say scholarly chops, scholarly background, but has no interest in being a research professor. He was joined in 1987 by someone else, very similar, And then I found them in 1991. And they had already identified most of these positions on the responsibility process. And it was entirely through participant observation. Then being very adroit in coaching situations where if somebody was clearly blaming, then as a coach, we would use our rapport to see if we could take blame away from them. Mm-hmm. And it became where we could absolutely predict that their next conversation would be one of a story, a narrative, a justify. And if we could take that away, right? And by taking away, what I mean is just kind of teaching them, well, you know that mental state, you know, isn't so doing any good.
Rewiring the brain to an extent.
Just not so much rewiring the brain as just getting them off of, using our skills as a coach to get them off of that mental state.
Yep.
And so through thousands of interactions and taking copious notes, this was developed. So it's very much the way Virginia Satir or Freud or Eric Jung or many of the founders of psychology simply took copious notes in working with patients that led them to develop their theories. And so since then, what I do is I simply test it with lots of people and see if it's true for them, and it seems to be true.
So you talked about moving people off state or moving them up effectively. Is it something that is likely, like, can you potentially jump levels, or how does that work?
Well, we just reviewed that, so maybe you can explain it, Craig.
Oh, okay. Well, please just ignore me, and I'll catch this podcast and I'll listen to it.
You know what?
My own answer, so thank you.
Experientially, yes, you skip levels, but we think that the mind actually is very rigorous, and we think the mind may stop at that level even for a microsecond before it moves through. And it knows that you're not going to buy the answer that it's going to hand you there or something. So let me give you this is such a common question. Let me give you this quick example. I was working with an editor on an article about the responsibility process, and she queried me in the article about the same thing. You know, she said, "You go through every step because I always seem to go straight to shame." And I said, "Can you think of an example where you did that? And can you recall what you were thinking just before you started beating yourself up?" And she said, "Oh yeah, I was telling myself some dumb story about how it was a set of circumstances beyond my control." I said, "So you weren't willing to accept the story as an answer, but you are willing to accept blaming yourself as an answer." So that's a really good example of her mind for a microsecond went to justify, but she rejected it. And then it landed on shame and said, "Well, you know, it's your fault." And she goes, "Oh yeah, it's my fault." And, you know, we've got a lot of conditioning in our society around, especially women and shame. You know, so that's common.
And I guess one of the things as a coach is to be able to look out for those things, to be able to ultimately make our leaders better in knowing responsibility for themselves, but probably more importantly, those that they lead.
There's a whole variety of benefits here. The first one is simply realize that all of our thoughts and all of our actions from below responsibility are wasted. Right? So if you use the language of lean, you've got waste below the line of responsibility and value above. In terms of collaboration, this is a great tool to have a shared language for stepping up to ownership. And in terms of leadership, the author Max Dupree has a famous quote that says, "The first job of a leader is to define reality." Well, if I define reality as it's their fault, you know, those departments, the customer's wrong, the supplier's wrong, then I'm going to teach my team how to survive in my team. So, you know, our first principle of leadership of the responsibility process says that no group in an organization will consistently operate at higher levels of responsibility than the people to whom they report. So that calls for very conscious leadership. And that's my job. My job is to coach and support leaders who want to master responsibility so that they can spend more time in resourceful places of thinking and model more resourceful thinking and acting for others.
And so this all kind of then ties into, I guess, a program that that you offer called the Leadership Gift.
We have many programs. So I have offers for business, solutions for business, and solutions for individuals. Mm-hmm. And the one you mentioned, the Leadership Gift program, is a solution that any individual in the world can join us. The Leadership Gift program is a very unique program that's designed around a membership community. So we have a set of core modules that are self-paced that you take yourself through. It's about 12 hours of work for those 8 core modules. And then we have all kinds of online meetings and meetups where we actually help each other practice and break through problems and identify ways towards mastery. I would recommend if anybody's interested in that they simply contact us through ChristopherAvery.com, my website. Our information available right now about it online is not great. I'm redoing it. So I just welcome the contact through our website, and we'll get you to the place you need to go to learn more. Our corporate solutions are all through PartnerWorks.com. And PartnerWorks is spelled W-E-R-K-S at the end. And one thing that any individual can do for no cost is get involved in helping me write the responsibility process book. So,
yeah. So you mentioned earlier you've got a book on the way. So that's really what we've been talking about here, trying to put this this model into.
Absolutely. So the book is fully drafted. It's been through one set of reviews from my inner circle, and now I'm rewriting it again, chapter by chapter. And we've set up a beta review group. And anybody can join the group and download chapters and participate in the feedback about it. And to do that, it's at ChristopherAvery.com/book.
Well, it's been great catching up with you. And as I said, I saw this a number of years ago. And I just like the model because it's a nice way of getting people to think about where they're at, particularly as a leader. But actually need any individual. It's something I've got in my coaching toolkit. So it's been great catching up with you again, Christopher, and good luck with the book.
Thank you. Thank you very much.